Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, howdy, space nerds. This podcast is a production of WMFE Public Radio. Public radio is supported by our listeners, and right now we're in what we call a silent drive. It's an effort to raise the funds we need to produce the programs you use, like Are We There Yet? If you want to support this station, and in turn this podcast, think about a gift of financial support. You can visit wmfe.org/support or call 1-800-785-2020. Any gift helps, but remember, we've got our very own mission patch with a gift of $32.10. It's a weird number, right? But listen, it's 3-2-1-0. Get it? I know. I thought it was Q2. Anyways, thanks for your support. On to the show. From the studios at WMFE in Orlando, Florida, this is the Space Exploration Podcast that asks the question, are we there yet? Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. Where were you when you first saw Pluto? The New Horizons flyby back in the summer of 2015 had all eyes on the deep spacecraft exploring the outermost parts of our solar system. New Horizons launched in 2006, but it was years in the making, and it wasn't easy getting mission managers and administrators on board with the idea of exploring Pluto. Chasing New Horizons is a new book out this week that chronicles the triumphs and challenges of that mission. And that mission is now going past Pluto and on its way to its next flyby, Ultima Thule, an object 43 astronomical units, or some 4 billion miles away. Dr. Alan Stern is the principal investigator on New Horizons and the co-author of Chasing New Horizons. I spoke with him about the mission and the decades-long path to reach Pluto.
Thank you, Brendan. Looking forward to chatting.
Well, great. Well, let's start with you first. When did this interest in Pluto develop, and why? Why did you choose Pluto to study?
Well, you know, my first interaction with that was actually when I did my master's thesis. The fellow that I was working for, my advisor, had a topic that was a physics topic to do with how Pluto's atmosphere behaves. So I got interested from a technical standpoint, but later, after the exploration of Neptune finished up with the NASA Voyager program and all the planets except Pluto had been explored, I got interested from an exploration standpoint, and so did a lot of other young scientists, and we pushed and we pushed, and eventually we made it happen, and it's been a dream come true.
Now, early in the book, you're quoted as saying in the 1980s, and I'm quoting you here, somebody much more senior told me you'll never sell going to Pluto to NASA as exploration. You have to find a way to bring scientific community to declare it is an important priority for the specific science that such a mission would yield. Is that how you approached pitching the New Horizons mission to NASA? Make it a scientific mission rather than we need to go and explore Pluto?
Yeah, very much. When I was a young scientist at the very beginning of my career, I thought that, you know, because we lead in so many ways with NASA, you know, first to all the planets, and of course, first humans to go to the moon, that I thought that the exploration angle was enough. Turned out, you know, because NASA has a fixed budget, a finite budget, and there are a lot more good ideas than there is money, there's a very fierce competition. In fact, it took us 12 years. We had 5 failed attempts to get a mission to Pluto. New Horizons was number 6. You really have to structure it as something the scientific community buys into. And we did. And what really got it over the top was the discovery of this third zone of our solar system called the Kuiper Belt, where Pluto orbits and where Pluto is kind of the model, the archetype, if you will, of the small planets that orbit out there in great numbers. And so by going to Pluto, we could, by extension, study all these other objects by analogy, sort of. And because that region of the solar system had never been explored, the scientific case was very strong, and we got it over the top at the National Academy of Sciences to be the number one priority to get funded back in the early 2000s And then we competed with others, and the New Horizons team won, and then we built it and flew it all the way out there.
I mean, you tell me that it was five projects. This is your sixth. I mean, is it disheartening when some of those projects don't make it past the drawing board? Or, I mean, five times somebody said no to you. I mean, I would have just given up at that point. What kept you going?
Well, you know, it was crushing. There's no question. The book, you know, the book really walks through all that. And, you know, it's just like in business, you know, it takes persistence. And, you know, I think when we looked in the mirror and thought about it, back then we knew that if we put our pencils down, that nobody else was going to pick it up. That just because it had been canceled three times doesn't mean it's a bad idea, or four times. We need to find the right key to unlock this lock and open the door to get to do it. And we felt very strongly about it, and we did persist. And sometimes we felt sort of like Charlie Brown, you know, with the football stolen over and over and over. But we just kept at it and at it. And the book is a very human story about people with a dream who accomplished it. It took a long time and a lot of work, but we did it.
At some points, it's a frustrating read because it seems like everything is an uphill battle. Like, you're up against other teams of scientists and engineers. There's regulatory hurdles to navigate, like fast-tracking the use of plutonium for the RTGs. It's politics. It's a game of funding. I mean, do you go from being a scientist at this point to being a bureaucrat navigating this, you know, this budgeting world, navigating this approval world? I mean, tell me about how your role changed, if it did at all, during this process from trying to get New Horizons off the drawing board and into space.
That's a really good question. I don't think we became bureaucrats at all. I think, you know, look, Columbus had to go to Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand and figure out how to get funded too. Sir Edmund Hillary had to figure it out, you know, to scale Everest. And I think this is pretty typical of exploration projects. You have to really want it. You have to convince people that it's worth their investment. We eventually, you know, we had to master a lot of skill sets that were not physics, which is what we were trained at. But eventually we accomplished our goal and really I think did something good for the books. You know, we developed new knowledge and we inspired people and we set records and completed the exploration, the first era of exploration of the solar system by capping it off with Pluto, the most distant of all the planets. And I think the book is a story about, you know, it's about people who have a dream and who won't take no for an answer, and who eventually accomplish their dream. It's an amazing story. And I look back on it, sometimes I pinch myself that we really did it, because in a way, it was kind of a fool's errand at the beginning. But none of us were old enough to recognize how high the odds were against us.
Dr. Alan Stern, when was that moment that you realized this was really happening, that you were going to be sending a spacecraft to Pluto and beyond?
Well, there were two moments. You know, one was the day that our rocket, the Atlas V, this big monster the size of a skyscraper, rolled out to the launch pad, and you could just stand there beneath it and say, oh, my God, look what we have done, this whole thing. It is ready to go. The other was the day of the flyby in July of 2015, on July the 14th, Bastille Day, when the first detailed images were coming back. And it became very real that this saga, this 26-year saga, had come to fruition. We had done it. And I'll tell you, a lot of people on our team were in tears. A lot of people just couldn't believe that it had actually happened, that everything they'd worked for so long. You know, it's like winning the Super Bowl of science. It was incredible.
And how many people were on your team at the time of the launch? How many people came out to watch that?
Well, you know, about 2,500 people worked on New Horizons to build a spacecraft, the rocket, the control center, all the software on board, all the scientific instruments. By the time we got to Pluto, it was a much smaller team. We didn't, you know, as a flight team, we only needed a much smaller number of belly buttons. But, 2,500 men and women worked on New Horizons across America.
Now, one of those moments you said that it was real for you was that flyby. And you and I spoke right before the flyby for a story I was working on here at WMFE. But that was really a moment that captivated all of the public. It wasn't just people in the space and science community, but pretty much everyone had their eyes on Pluto for that flyby. I mean, the response, I mean, from my perspective was astounding. I mean, did you expect so many people to be interested in this spacecraft passing by Pluto?
You know, we thought that this would be generally of interest. But the tidal wave of public interest caught us by surprise. Hundreds of magazine covers, hundreds of newspapers, front page above the fold, literally, no exaggeration, billions of visits to our website, hundreds of press that came to the flyby, network coverage. People just love exploration. I think Pluto's a bit of a brand. That helps, too. And I think the fact that nobody really knew if it would work. Mm-hmm. It was a one-shot, put all your marbles on the table. It's either going to work or not. There's no redo here. There's this little spacecraft out here 3 billion miles from home. You can't drive it in real time because the speed of light, blindingly fast. But, you know, if you have to send a command to help, it takes 4.5 hours to get up there at the speed of light. People wanted to see if it would work. It was a drama, and it did work out. And people also like good news stories. And this is an example of, I think, what humans do best. You know, no other species on Earth are explorers, only humans. And I hope the book brings that out to some extent.
I realized it was a big deal when people were changing their profile pictures to pictures of Pluto. That had to be incredible for you to see, right?
And it didn't hurt at all that when we got there, the biggest single feature on the surface is just a dead ringer for a big heart.
It really was an incredible moment in time for public perception of space exploration and planetary science. I mean, do you credit that kind of public interest tidal wave, as you say, as drumming up support for other missions that launched, you know, after New Horizons, like the Juno mission, which did have a very public focus with the Juno cam, and also missions like OSIRIS-REx that are going to asteroids. I mean, can you kind of credit it to Pluto's support kind of pulling that through?
I hope that we keep some of that up. I think more than our drumming up support for other missions, I think that we demonstrated how much people are interested in the technology and the science and simply the raw exploration value and in risk-taking. All those things, you know, and there are a lot of human stories as well. In the book, I know, brings that out. Right down to, you know, just 10 days before the flyby, we lost contact with a spacecraft for the first time in a 10-year mission and had to rescue it like something out of the movie Apollo 13. So I think that a lot of things contributed to that interest, and I think that hopefully we demonstrated that how much the public all around the world on every continent supports this stuff. I think when humans go to Mars, it's going to be another tidal wave, and I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, the book does a great job at showing the human aspect of this mission, that there are people that are really, really invested in this piece of machinery that's, you know, hurtling through the solar system at that point. You know, it sometimes you forget that there are people on the other end of this thing that have dedicated, you know, decades of their, career to these missions. And it's very cool to see the people behind it.
It really is, more than anything, a people story. We build circuit boards and spacecraft frames and thrusters and all those other things that have to go into it. But people build those things. And it's all about, my friend Michael Soleri, who's a New York City photographer and who has become our project photographer. Some of his photos are in the book. Soleri took a look at New Horizons before we launched it. He saw it, there in the the clean room down at Cape Canaveral before we put it up on the rocket. And said, you know, this is American workmanship. Look at this thing. And hopefully that's brought out, too, in the story.
Now, Dr. Stern, these projects, these missions, as you've discussed, they take, you know, take years, if not decades, to develop, and yet they can be killed by a president's budget request or congressional spending bill. I mean, knowing what you know, is there a need for reforming how these missions are funded or approved or fast-tracked, or should we keep doing it the way we've been doing it?
I guess it's like Ben Franklin said, you know, about democracy. He said he said something like it's a terrible form of government, except it's the best one we know. The system is messy and flawed. There's no question. But having been on the inside of it, I don't think there's a better way to do it than the way that NASA does it. And NASA's a jewel of the American people. For so many reasons, really high batting average for success, making history, creating a brand for the United States, developing new knowledge. I mean, there was never a white hat organization in the federal government. I put my vote behind NASA.
We've talked about where New Horizons has been, but the mission is still going strong. It's still zooming through the solar system at this point. What's next for New Horizons? What can we expect this year?
Well, that's a perfect question because we are on our way to our next flyby, not of Pluto. We're going much farther outward. The spacecraft is going to fly by a building block, a small building block of the planets out there like Pluto, called Ultima Thule, which is a Norse term for beyond the known worlds, beyond the known frontier. And that flyby is on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day 2019. So just the very end of this year. And we're going to be exploring something much farther out and something we know a lot less about, but something that's going to teach us a great deal about the formation of the planets. And New Horizons is, as a spacecraft, hurtling towards that intercept. The ground team is writing all the software to do the entire flight plan around the flyby. And we just can't wait to do our next chapter in the exploration of deep space.
I saw you tweeted yesterday that you received a green signal, I believe it's called, from New Horizons. So everything is working properly on the spacecraft now?
Right. As we speak, the spacecraft is hibernating. That's a technique that we use where it takes care of itself for months on end so that we can have a much smaller ground team than most missions and operate at lower cost. And once a week on Monday, the spacecraft transmits a status report. And if it's what we call a green beacon, it means everything went well for the past week. And if it's a red beacon, then we have to swing into action. And that's happened a few times over the past 12 years since we launched it. Yesterday was a green beacon Monday, and we like those.
Well, here's hoping for many more green beacon Mondays. I've got to ask you, I mean, I get to speak to a lot of principal investigators, and I love asking this question. You know, did you ever imagine early on in your career you would have a spacecraft in space doing the things that New Horizons is doing and will continue to do? I mean, does it just boggle your mind sometimes when you think about it?
It does. The honest truth is it does. At the time that we started the quest to explore Pluto, there was no such thing as scientist-led space missions to the planet. It had never been done. That was invented in the 1990s when we were already pushing for this. But when we first started, all I wanted to do was see a mission take place. I wanted to find out what the place was all about, and I hoped in my wildest dreams that I could be on the science team. And then, as it turned out, I led the whole project, and it became a dream come true. It has really made my whole career feel like, you know, it's something that really contributed and made a difference to individual people, science, to the United States, and even a little bit to history. And I think everybody on the project feels that way. This has been a very special project for everyone who worked on it because, you know, after all the planets from Mercury to Neptune had been explored, Pluto was kind of the last train to Clarksville. It's the last opportunity to be on a first mission. And everyone who worked on the project felt that they were doing something really special. And it made for a great team.
And it makes for a great story. And you can read all about it in the book, Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto. We've been speaking to the co-author of that book and also the principal investigator on the New Horizons mission, Dr. Alan Stern. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, thank you, Brendan.
Support for Are We There Yet comes from the listeners of WMFE. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. Join the conversation online. We've got a Facebook page. Search for Are We There Yet podcast. Or you can take to Twitter. The show is at AWTYMars and I'm at Space Brendan. And you can find more space news online at WMFE.org/space. Until next time, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.